Mountain State Mysteries contains mature themes and discussions that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. All individuals mentioned in this episode are considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Hey, y'all. I'm your host, Mark Covey.
And I'm Courtney.
And this is the 100th episode of Mountain State Mysteries. Who would have thought that we would be here today?
In all honesty, I really didn't.
I mean, honestly, I figured we would stop after like season two.
In all honesty, I just thought it was going to be a one and done for us.
Yeah.
I know us.
Yeah. And I mean, it was a lot of work that went into it. We changed color schemes. We changed the entire idea three times, something like that.
It sounds good.
And here we are. And I mean, it's brought us amazing opportunities that we cannot talk about yet. There is a hint if you follow us on Instagram and Facebook, all at Mountain State Mysteries, you do not want to miss it because it's probably the biggest thing we've done other than...
I'm going to say it's probably the most insane thing that's ever happened to us thus far.
It is because... It was, what, like a week to prep? Then I had like less than 24 hours to prep for another. So, yeah, it was definitely a wild ride and happy I got to do it with you. I'm happy I get to do this with you because, honestly, I don't think there is anyone else who would have done this with me from like a wild idea that I had.
Y'all just don't understand like how wild this was. This was literally coming back from Washington, D.C., yeah. 2022, after a concert, talking about it, and he was like, I would like to do a podcast, and we had always joked about me doing a podcast and all my crazy stories,
yeah.
But we started putting in the work, what we simply thought was going to become just a hobby,
yeah.
Say the least. You know,
yeah. Then
it turned into a passion project.
Yeah.
It really, really did.
And I mean, it's opened doors to us. We have amazing friends like Alex. We've been on other podcasts. We get to talk about it all the time. We have the secret project that we worked on. We meet amazing families. We've got to be a part of a search. So really, like, we're not even on 4 years. Like, this is 3.5 years right now. So,
yeah.
We're really just, in my mind, getting started because we've became more comfortable doing this and spending God knows how much time on a case because we can be working on three cases at once. And, you know, today's episode is a little different. We are going to be going through some cases and talking about them because, you know, we've had something kind of put a halt on Mountain State Mysteries for a second. I know I keep talking about it, and that's all you get to know. Like, the ones who know, know. But we haven't been able to really work on an episode yet. So,
no.
We are going to be going through some cases that have stuck with us through the 3.5 years of Mountain State Mysteries, and we're just going to talk about them for a little bit. So, Court, are you ready to get lost in the mystery?
You know, I always am.
So, let's start where it all began. The case of Nellie Rand and Elmer Ray Bailey. On November 4th, 1947, two prominent residents of Beckley, West Virginia, was murdered on an access road behind the Black Knight Country Club.
So, they were taken down to the town of Penman, And their bodies were dumped over an embankment.
Ray's car was taken to the old Raleigh ball field, which is where State Trooper R.L. Tapscott found a large pool of blood and other belongings in the rear of the vehicle.
Nellie's car was later found on Wright Road, which is right behind Black Knight.
Yeah. And this case, I swear, it has taken us on so many journeys. You were working one day. I just woke up. I ended up going to a store in, I guess you would say, kind of the Uptown Beckley area because it's on a side street. Mm-hmm. Saw a map of Pym and I'm like, oh, this is actually kind of a really big area. Turns out it's where the federal prison is, so we could not get to where it is. And
one of us may have tried to scheme ideas on how to get in.
I don't know who that could be.
I was told no.
You were told no.
I was told no multiple times.
Multiple times. By me, for a good reason. You know. Then we visited the graves. We've drove by Black Knight so many times, not knowing they were filming a TV show. In there at the time while we were driving by. We were like zooming through the park. I'm like, oh God, this was being filmed while we were there. We didn't like see the first film crew at all.
No.
But then I'm like, oh, well, I guess it kind of makes sense. And turns out we decided to drop on Fridays, which ended up being the anniversary of the murders. Mm-hmm. And we, oh no, it's kind of just been a case that has always stuck with us because it's our baby case in a way. Like, it's the case that we can talk about no matter what, the suspects, the people, how, you know, it's not solved due to the person being a very prominent person in Beckley who murdered them. And we have visited the grave of Nellie and Ray, Nellie's husband, his new wife, Ray's wife. And then of a policeman who...
Oh, yeah. But he totally knows who done it.
Well, he said that in an article, and I do not remember... I have not been able to find that article since I have tried to look for it.
I swear, I think there is stuff that we find, and then after that, when we go to look back for it, it's just gone. Disappears.
Yeah.
Fully convinced of it.
We were in the library for so long that they're like, yeah, we're closing. You got to go. We're like... Okay.
I mean, this case was our baby. It's still our baby. Mm-hmm. Is the case that we tell more people than I think any other case.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I still say somebody knows.
Of course.
I doubt anybody is truly still alive that was involved with it. Mm-hmm. But somebody knows who done it. And their family does. And I just couldn't imagine that your family's name is that important to where her child is still alive and doesn't know who murdered her mother.
Yeah.
I think that's the worst part about it.
Yeah, and we got to meet Agnes, who wrote a book, and it's somewhere at my house. I will read that book a few times because I'm like, I know she scanned in the police documents, and she's like, my friend wrote on the back, who did it? I'm like, but I can't see, and she won't tell us who, but she said we are right.
We have begged.
Yeah, she said we are right on our theory, though, so...
Denied.
Yeah.
We're always denied on stuff.
Certain things, yeah.
We are always denied on things.
Yeah, certain things, yeah.
It's always going to be our little special case. Mm-hmm. And I want to tell y'all one of the weirdest little facts about it. Their graves are literally in a triangle.
Yeah, you have Nellie next to the road.
Her husband's in a mausoleum.
And Ray is kind of off a little bit.
Off a little bit, but it definitely makes a triangle. Yeah. So they're still having a little love triangle, even now in death.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
It really is. Not plain, but yeah, still a little triangle.
The next case that we want to bring back is one that I'm going to say broke our hearts. Mm-hmm. And that's the case of baby Christian. On March 21st, 2004, a Harpers Ferry park ranger found a garbage bag on the bank of the Shenandoah River. In the garbage bag was a newborn baby with his umbilical cord still attached. What was holding everything down was 3 5-pound weights.
One thing that has like always stood out to me about this case is the fact that the town of Harpers Ferry has basically adopted baby Christian, bought him a tombstone, bought him literally new clothes to be buried in. Like, they have went out of his way. They tried to do everything they can to get him to find out who he is. We aren't sure if DNA testing has been done. We have tried to find that out. Sadly, that kind of falls into a funding issue for the whole DNA thing, because that is one of the biggest issues.
I think one of the biggest things that still blows my mind to this day is, was he born in a hospital? Was he a home birth? You know, there's so many questions that I have.
Like, did his parents have other kids and they were just like, one more is going to be too much?
I mean, there's so much I think about with this case. And a lot of it is, and did the mother receive the aftercare that she needed after giving birth? I mean, that's one of my biggest things, too. And I just, this case is so heartbreaking. Yeah. It will always be heartbreaking to me.
Yeah, and it was one of those that we just randomly stumbled upon. And we're like, how have we never heard this before? Which is how a lot of our cases come about. And, you know, we still need to go to Harpers Ferry, ask questions. I'm sure people will talk to us about it, because I feel like the entire town just kind of loves baby Christian, even though they have no idea who he really is yet. One day. Another case that has always stuck out with me, which stuck to me even before the podcast, was Margie Dodd. On September 7th, 1977, Margie Dodd left work at a local bank. Within 5 miles of her drive home, she pulled off the road at an Emeco gas station and was abducted.
16 years later, her body was found. And it would be 24 years before she would finally be identified.
Which, last year, I was lucky to meet the man who found her body. One of the sweetest people you will ever know. Him and his wife. Absolutely love him. Like, he was actually arrested because he was crossing over into another county to hunt. And the judge was like, why are you here? And he's like, I was going hunting. He's like, okay, you're good. Bye. Record was wiped clean. All of that stuff. I hate that they thought for years. They actually, in the beginning, when they found a body on Bolt Mountain, they thought, oh, James Lee Haynes. Automatically thought it was him. Then, for some reason, the detective over the case was like automatically Sue Roop, then went to other people, not Margie Dodd, which, you know, her case is insane because it somewhat took place in Ohio, somewhat took place in West Virginia. There were psychics coming out of the woodwork. I feel like there was one that was right because it said something about a mining road, and she was technically found on a mining road in a way. So her case is one that will always, I think, stick with us and the entire city of Beckley because, you know, even though the person isn't convicted, they do think they know who it is. We do have a name. Sadly, I do not remember the name, which it's probably good that I don't. I know you have it, but to me, I'm like, what's taking so long? Like,
I think another big thing about this case was so much mishandling. Mm-hmm. From the time that her body was found until she was finally identified, there was so much mishandling with it.
I think it was 93 when...
I mean, DNA was absolutely starting to become a thing at that given point. But even at that point, there was no DNA ran, anything of that nature. It just happened to be her jewelry.
Yeah, and her husband literally saw it, and in 3 seconds, he's like, that's Margie's.
Yeah, I mean, I just have to say, they need to do better on these cases.
Oh, 100%, because, like, why let something go unsolved for that period of time? Because at the end of the day, you have... Her parents died, I want to say, not too long. It was either after the case happened or it was a few years. It's something crazy because they died like kind of close together. And I'm not sure if she had any other family members. I cannot remember that. But I know that her husband, and honestly, props to the company he worked for, because they let him use a helicopter to search. Props to him. And I forget if I said this or not, the Emeco gas station was the same Emeco gas station that Sue Roop was last seen in. Yeah, so it's just one of those cases that I think will always stick with everyone, in a sense, because we had people telling us that, oh, I saw Margie at the bank. She was the sweetest person ever. Like, you couldn't beat her. Like, she was so sweet. And, you know, she would always wait for her husband to get off work to come pick her up. She was safer at the Raleigh Mall than she was driving home, which is so sad.
So many things about her case. Yep. So many things. Mm-hmm. It's disappointing.
It really is. And I mean, I'm happy her body was found. I'm happy, you know, she was laid to rest, and I forget if she has a grave, if she was cremated, I forget, but her husband has peace of mind knowing she is located now. But
I think there's never going to be a peace of mind until that justice is served.
Yeah. Yeah. Because as far as I know, the person is still alive and roaming the streets still, because it's a local person. Yeah. And I mean, we kind of touched on the person in the case, but we didn't know the name yet. Mm-hmm. And we found out the name not too long ago.
I think we have to go back to a case that literally we have so many questions about. Not that we don't have questions about every one of them.
True.
But we have to talk about Leah Hickman's.
Her case.
It was absolutely. So for those who don't know, Leah Hickman, she was a 20-year-old Marshall student who was later recovered in the laundry room of her apartment building. And one of the very last places that she was seen alive was McDonald's.
It took them a week to find her body. She, like you said, was discovered in the basement laundry room, but she was in a crawl space, which you had to know where the crawl space
exactly
was to know where it was. And me and Alex talked about this when she was down here. She doesn't think it was intended to be Leah. Well, what was it? She was like, it was known Leah hated her sister's ex-boyfriend. He was serving in the military at the time, came back, was getting his stuff, ran into Leah. Leah hated him, so she was like just mouthy to him and stuff. And she thinks that's when he did something. And then, you know, of course, we think the sister helped, because you would have to know where that crawl space was, because we were sent pictures of it before we even did this case. And You have to know where the crawl space is.
Let me just say this much. With my job, it has actually taken me past that apartment.
Yeah.
There is no way anybody from the public can see where that entrance is.
Because it's behind the house, isn't it?
It's behind the house. You cannot see it. You have to know where it is.
Oh, and the spray paint. Someone spray painted "Who Killed Leah Hickman" on the side of the apartment building. Mm-hmm. Props to them. Good for them. Because
absolutely. We love people who call people out. We love it.
Yeah. But sadly, and like we have shared her case a few times on Facebook just to get like more pressure on people. And it is one of like always our top shared posts.
It's just, it's so disappointing with the fact that it took so long to discover her body.
And I don't know how the dogs didn't discover her body, because they did have dogs in there. So
honestly, I just think that there could be a possibility of something covering up the scent to where they wouldn't be able to pick up on it.
Wasn't she wrapped in something? She was wrapped in like a plastic tarp or something like that, I believe.
Mm-hmm. It's just so sad. And just to revert back, I have to beg to differ with the one theory we just discussed, but I feel Leah was especially targeted on this. I really do. I mean, I think if this could just be me talking, I just feel that the sister and the ex-boyfriend were trying to get back together, but she knew she can't get back together with him as long as Leah was around.
I mean, that could be a good possibility, because I believe there was an argument, because I mean, we have seen her living situation, and
let me just say too, this apartment is absolutely not in one of the safest places. Yeah. I mean, in the daytime, I was like, there is something off with this neighborhood.
Because her mattress was on plastic milk crates.
Yeah, I mean, there was just so much with this that was truly a disturbing thing about that.
Which, the apartment building, it was like a co-ed apartment building. There was construction going on at the time, but no one was there but Leah.
Mm-hmm. And her sister.
Her sister wasn't there at the time.
Not at the time of the murder, but she was a tenant.
Yeah. I don't remember where she was at the time. But I do know that her mom was like at the Huntington Mall and was trying to get in contact with Leah that day.
And it's not that far of a distance either. No. That's the entire thing. I love the fact that the Huntington Mall is located in Barbersville.
Yeah, and it's called Huntington Mall, which we have a case we need to cover about the Huntington Mall. We've talked about it, but we haven't dived into it yet. So
I don't know. It just, if somebody out there's got the information
and they just want to speak,
and you need to speak.
Yeah,
that's just all there is to it. You need to speak and let it be known what's going on.
And I do believe that the stepmom knows, because it was her half sister, it wasn't her full sister. I believe that her stepmom and dad got a divorce, and of course you're going to protect your daughter. So to me, she would have to know what happened. And I could be totally wrong on that. She may not know what happened, but odds are not in her favor in my book.
And again, if you know any information, you need to come forward. Mm-hmm. I would be so ashamed to say that I knew something that could help put a family to ease. Mm-hmm. Of course, I know that a victim is said to be resting in peace, but are they truly resting in peace while their killer is still out there roaming?
I mean, I know that, you know, we dabble in ghost hunting here and there, and we've had conversations with certain people, and some are at rest, some aren't.
But I'm just saying, yeah. though, I think it would be just one of those things. Is a person truly at rest?
Yeah.
Knowing that someone took their life and they still get to live their life.
Yeah.
That's what kills me about the entire thing right there. No pun intended. But it's literally just for the fact that every one of our victims' lives were cut short. I don't care if they were elderly or what, their lives were still cut short. Mm-hmm. And this person's out there living their life like nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Which kind of segues into our next case, because the case of Juliet Staunton Clark is one that, you know, we know who did it.
Mm-hmm.
But sadly, we cannot prove it because everyone has, like, passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely think it was the son-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So, for those who don't know about Juliet, she was a very wealthy socialite in Charleston, West Virginia.
Yeah, she took over the newspaper when her husband passed away.
And yeah. She was beaten to death with her grandson asleep.
Yeah, and to me, the only reason that could even happen is because the person who did it knew his son would be safe no matter what. Even though grandmother dead, he would be safe because her workers would come in the next morning and take care of. Yeah, and her workers came in. I actually have a book on this, and I've dabbled in it. Haven't read the full thing because it's a thick book. And it is one of those that kind of everyone knows who did it, but it cannot be proven. He apparently went to horse stables, got a magazine that night. It can never be proven because there was only, in the entire city of Charleston, there was only like 3 Aviator magazines sold, something like that. And it just, I don't know. It's just one of those cases that kills me because it could easily been solved then. You had the mayor who intersected each and every single time they dragged the river, found nothing. They couldn't find the murder weapon. So, and her house, beautiful, would love to be in it, just to go see, because it's in like one of the best parts of Charleston, I believe, because I feel like I've Googled her house before, and you can basically, where it is from the backyard, you can see the Capitol. And I'm like, I would love that every single day. But which it's, I don't want to say it's ironic, but it kind of is, because her cousin Juliet, who she was named after, was murdered in Huntington by who we think was her son, because drugs, something like that. Her case was one of those I'm like, huh, this is crazy. And it was one of like the first cases we kind of really got into. So, like, you have 2 tragedies, which, in all honesty, it's not the only tragedy, because I want to say one of Juliet's grandsons was killed because he got, like, paint thinner or something on him, and it burned him. Something happened, and he ended up passing away, which is so sad because he was so young. So, another case from Charleston that has always stuck out with me, and it was one that we didn't cover together, but we've talked about it. It was the Steak and Ale murder. I want to say Danny Castellera, but it's not Danny Castellera. The Steak and Ale murder, because the victim had ties to Beckley. He apparently had like a sex addiction. He fired someone from a bank. Apparently they were mad. He was going to meet people at the bank with his girlfriend. And he apparently had sex tapes everywhere. And his case has never been solved. Like, it's been one of those, the restaurant is no longer there. It's, I know where it is. It's like you're going to Sarah's Bakery and you cut by that, one restaurant that is like in an old train depot.
Lowry's.
Yeah. It's, on that little stretch of road there. There's like a factory or something there now. But, yeah, his case is one that sticks out. Like, will always stick out to me because not solved. And I think we can both say Danny Casolaro's case, which I know you loved it because government conspiracies.
Love conspiracy theories.
I do not think it was a suicide. I will never think his case was a suicide.
There is no way that's ever a suicide.
He was definitely murdered. And, you know, I think it was because of his ties to what he called the octopus. And
if you've learned anything, and people need to realize too, anytime that there is about to be a huge break in a lot of this stuff, somebody mysteriously comes up dead.
Yeah.
It will always be ruled a suicide, or if it's a homicide, they magically cannot find evidence. They cannot find who done it. Tapes are magically erased. Yeah. Things of that nature. I mean, the only thing with this case was whoever made it look like he did die by suicide, they done a horrible job with it.
Because
horrible job.
We've practiced with the box cutter on not us, but other things. And I definitely do not think it was a box cutter that cut him. I think because, like, we've seen the crime scene pictures and poor guy. I mean,
if you look at the cuts that were on him, they're huge. There's no way in the world that a box cutter done that.
Yeah. And I mean, there was a lot of cuts. It literally cut one of his tendons. And that right there to me was like a big F you because he was a rider. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. His case will always stick with me. And I know his case is still being worked to the best of the Martinsburg Police Department. So, props to them for keeping this case open after all these years.
And another thing is, too, Big Brother is keeping their eyes out.
Yeah.
That will always be one of the biggest things right there. Big Brother will be keeping their eye out on this case. And if y'all really get thinking about it, you have to think, why is there so many whistleblower laws to protect these folks? Mm-hmm. I mean, that is what they are there for. I mean, a lot of these people have like nonstop security around their houses who are whistleblowers. They, a lot of them end up in witness protection programs. It is very dangerous, y'all. Like, it is dangerous. Mm-hmm. 1,000% dangerous. And just for the fact that he was getting ready to just blow something up and release that information that the public needed, they decided he's not going to do it. We're going to make sure he doesn't do it.
Yeah. And, yeah, like, it just blows my mind that, like, they cleaned the hotel room the very next day after his body was taken out and all of that. And you can still rent the hotel room, which, I mean, I'm kind of not opposed to.
You've got to understand, we do all kinds of crazy stuff.
That could be like another State Haunts live stream, which we have covered some true crime paranormal related cases. You have Mamie Thurman. You have Lake Shawnee, Cabin 13.
So much.
Yeah, we've done like a spin on Cabin 13. Then we released an actual episode, and you know, I love how we find out when we're doing this that your mom's like, oh, I worked with him like a few weeks before the murder, and we're like, Huh?
I swear you never know what's going to come out of that woman's mouth.
Literally.
And you never know.
We've also done a Facebook Live at a place for a case, which was the case of the murders at the Mayberry Mansion. Mm-hmm. We definitely have other ideas for Facebook Lives for whenever is just the right time. And I think Cabin 13 is kind of one of them, because that would just be one of the places that I would love. Which, I did a TikTok for this case, and I walked down to Cabin 13 because I'm like, it doesn't look like anyone's staying here. Automatic, just creep factor. Like, there was 5 steps left, and it was like, oh, you definitely feel like you're being watched. And I've been around cabins there before because to go to the swinging bridge in Babcock, which I never knew was there, you have to like walk down the cabins because you can like access the cabin from that bridge. And have I ever told you I've actually been in Cabin 13?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, still one of my absolute favorite stories of all time.
So if you guys are new, me, my mama, my aunt, and my cousin had a little club called the Outdoor Fun Club. I don't know if you ever knew that or not.
Did not.
Yeah. So we would go.
OMC.
Yeah, literally, we would go to just like different parks and all that. And we were just walking, and my aunt was telling us a story. And then these people come like, can we help you? And we're like, oh, we're just looking at this cab. And they're like, do you want to look in it? And we're like, sure. Mind you, I'm a child. Rachel's a child. Mama stays up in the road. And Rachel walks in. And Rachel, I know you're listening. I know you do not care if I tell the story. She walks in, puts her arms out. I can feel her. She is here. They're like, what are you talking about? A husband killed her wife here. My head hurts. She got hit in the head. We have no idea if the people stayed there after that night, because I got in the car and I just looked at Rachel and went, why'd you do that? She went, I felt heaviness. I went, I'm like, Rachel, you can like talk about that after, but I'm like, you put the fear of God in these people. I bet you they're not even staying here tonight. And there is no other hotel near Babcock. You were like stuck in cabins, no cell phone service. And then, yeah, so that's always a story I always have to tell. And I kind of played on that in the State Haunts episode because I, you know, the girl in it was Rachel. So I'm like, you know, shout out to my cousin. Okay, have a few questions for you.
Okay.
Just throwing these out here. Do you ever feel nervous about putting your voice or opinions out about a case?
No, because my mom taught me if it is something that you strongly believe in, you share your opinion, you share your voice, because sometimes you're the only voice that that person has.
Yeah, which I've slowly learned that. There was one instance in a case that we have not covered yet. We were passing the house. My windows was rolled down in my vehicle. And all of a sudden, I hear, murderer! And I just kept driving, and a black SUV pulled out. I went, you have just got us killed. And luckily, no. They just went a different direction, but
We were followed for like 3 miles.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think really the only case I was semi-nervous about recently was Danny Casolaro, because, you know, the whole conspiracy.
You were nervous about that one. You were also nervous about Alex's too.
Yes, because that one, we were the first podcast to break when she was found. I think I remember it. I was laying in bed And I typed something up real quick. I'm like, you cool with me doing this? And you're like, yeah. Because I think news broke at the time already.
It was, let me tell y'all a little backstory about this. We were actually recording
the case of Julia Davis.
And we were recording it. My mom calls and I played off. I don't answer the phone. I was like, she knows we're recording. Yeah. She called again and I looked at Mark and I said, oh, let me get this. He's got the entire recording of just my end of the phone call. Mm-hmm. And it was mom calling to tell us, well, tell us that they have finally found Alex's remains. Mm-hmm. And we just stopped recording and just immediately just threw shoes on and stuff to try to get up because my uncle was there. Mm-hmm. And I knew that was a time that he didn't need to be alone. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they wouldn't let us down to the crime scene. But that will always stick out more than anything with that case. And mm-hmm. I think another reason why it was such a nerve-wracking case was some of the stuff that I had told you about the case. And I swear one day, y'all, there's going to be such a deep dive. Like when I say you go down into a rabbit hole with this case. Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, there's stuff that is in our episode that's never been released. Like, there are pictures on our website that mm-hmm. we scanned at your grandmother's house. And we picked and chose what ones we wanted to use because, you know, there is, I think it's her school picture that's like the most, like, I don't want to say iconic, but it's the picture that's most used in mm-hmm. her case. And we were able to release a high quality version of that, and then her glamour picture. My favorite one is like her at a birthday party giving side eye because she wanted cake.
Yes.
And that's like her on Christmas. You're in the background, your uncle's in the background. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I mean, it is just, I think in all honesty, I think those were the two that you were the most nervous about.
Yeah.
He'll bring something to me and I'm like, let's do it. And he was like, you don't want to think about it. I'm like, no, let's just do it.
Yeah, there's only been two episodes that we have been banned from covering.
Yes.
One is from another county near us. Mm-hmm. And then one was in my nanny's backyard, which is now my cousin's backyard. So, like, the people are out of jail. They know where they live, so we cannot, you know, release that. But it's a good case. Mm-hmm. Definitely showed how dumb people can be in a case.
Yes.
So, like, we have that, but oh, this one is a good one. Has anyone ever reached out to us claiming they knew something about a case?
All the time. All the time. And the only thing I'm going to say this much, we appreciate you guys so much. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to reach out to us and say that you got information, you got to provide that information to us. Mm-hmm. 1,000%. That information's got to be provided for us because, in all honesty, sometimes it's literally just something so simple that can make or break a case mm-hmm. like nobody's business. Yeah.
And I mean, we have recently got stuff on a case that we, of course, do not agree with. We are never going to release what we got.
No.
But it did give us confirmation on what we knew. Mm-hmm. About certain people and a certain thing that happened. So you have that. Then
I think honestly too, just something that we recently, a project that we just recently done, I mean, there was evidence that was given that literally told an entire story, and it's a 2-second clip. And it literally told the entire story of what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reason why we say what you might not consider something significant, it's actually very significant to these cases.
It really is, because, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it really in all is. Honesty, it just, it truly, truly is. And that way, and a lot, of, in all honesty, we will never give your name. It will always be done anonymously.
Yeah, or we will give you like a fake name.
Yes.
Like we've done that before.
Yes, we protect identities with a lot of stuff. So absolutely.
Yeah, we have messages about cases we haven't covered yet that we've posted on Facebook. And I'm like, I need a boat. So.
I think I got a message the other day. Are y'all even thinking about considering this? And I'm like, we've had something to come up. We've had to push it to the back for time being because we had to focus on this really quick.
Yeah.
But I promise y'all there will be a point to where those cases that you send us, mm-hmm. we will cover.
Yeah, because we make a list of what cases we want to cover in like a cycle. So we are slowly making our way through those cases. We've had some bumps in the road. Mm-hmm. We have had things just put, I would say, mysteries on a halt for 2 to 3 weeks. And we are going to get through these cases to where we can do more cases, because we already kind of have some names picked and then certain cases picked. But it definitely takes time, because we spend as much time as we can on these cases, even though we are a weekly podcast trying to get stuff out weekly.
And another thing, too, is life happens. Mm-hmm. Life happens. Yeah. I mean,
we have learned that in this past year.
Life happens. Mm-hmm. And we both work full-time jobs. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think one of the most insane things was, I think one day I came back from Morgantown from work, and I've been up there since early morning, worked all day up there, drove down here, and we recorded.
Yeah, like today I had a procedure done, came home, napped for a little bit, you came home from work, changed, I'm like, let's record. So I'm like still coming off anesthesia, so like, if you see me yawn, it's not because I'm tired. It's literally because anesthesia is wearing off of me. So,
and I actually came from Barbersville.
Oh, God.
I came from Barbersville beforehand.
Yeah. So, it's been a productive day for us today.
I mean, and that's just something, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize. You know, a lot of times, like, on podcasts and stuff, like, these are people's full-time jobs. Well, this is our second full-time job.
I'm trying to make it a full-time job. Trust me. I'm trying, because this is what I would love to do full-time. Because I have a 10-year plan for Mountain Saint Mysteries. Courtney knows some of it. Courtney doesn't know all of it. She's kind of scared when she hears it.
Courtney has a 10-year plan for her life.
So, yeah. Like, yeah, we have... I have a 10-year plan, so, you know.
And I'm honestly, I love doing this. Mm-hmm. I love my job.
Yeah.
I love my job.
Yeah, I hate my job, so.
I love my job.
Which I can actually already answer this one for you. Has anyone involved in a case ever contacted you after an episode aired?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
It wasn't directly towards us, but we had someone in the case of Dr. Whitley.
Yes.
Dr. Whitley in the comments, like, saying, I'm not going to listen, but I hope they mention this. I'm like, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, we mentioned that your son was exonerated, let out of prison, all that. And I think that's the only time.
We've got those. We've had a lot of family reach out to us. Mm-hmm.
Like the daughter of Charles Boone reached out to us.
A lot of them have told us what great jobs we've done. And they were like, but a lot of times they're just like, hey, y'all done a wonderful job, but this is what happened. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we literally go off of what we find online.
Yeah, because I know exactly what case. It's case of James Lee Haynes, Brenda and Linda. Mm-hmm. Love them. They are our family. You know, we went off my nanny. She was the main source. Heard the story our entire lives. Like, you knew the story from your family. I knew it from mine. We went off newspaper records. Mm-hmm. And it said that he left the van with the family. It was still in Germany. It was being shipped because he just did get back to the States. Or they just did get back to the States.
Yeah.
So he had a hitchhike. The wife never got the van back, mm-hmm. which I think is a bunch of BS.
Same.
And then there was a lot of misreporting on it and speculation that he was a victim of the Mad Butcher. No, he was a victim of Lundy Trump, Cazorts, mm-hmm. and another boy who is literally slipping my brain right now. And, you know, I'm happy that there has been movement in that case, although I'm not happy it's the movement that we wanted. Mm-hmm. It's still being talked about all these years later. And, I mean, we always have people reach out. Like, even, it's like a friend, a family member.
We have people telling us all the time, yeah. like, you honestly don't know how incredible this person was.
Yeah.
This person was the person who would give you the shirt off their back. Mm-hmm. I mean, things like that.
I mean, we posted the case of Samantha Burns on Facebook yesterday, and someone was literally, this just came up on my Facebook, and I'm sitting at the Memorial baseball field that is in her name. It's either baseball or softball.
It's a softball field.
Softball field, sorry. And, like, people were just leaving, like, the best comments about Samantha. Mm-hmm. Which I always love when that happens. And then, you know, there's cases that we don't know about that we post, and they will blow up. Mm-hmm. We learned that one for a fact because we were like, what's going on?
Yeah.
We were like updating each other every hour on the hour about how that one case
was. That one right there. And that, it's so funny because some of the stuff that we honestly think will blow up doesn't.
Yeah.
Things that we have no idea, we're literally just putting out a missing person notification and stuff like that, because that is something we are very big on sharing, mm-hmm. is missing person cases. And next thing we know, it is off the chain.
Yeah. And I mean, I will say that we do not post thinking, oh, this is going to be our viral moment. No, we do not do that. But it's like, we will think, oh, this case is popular, people are going to share all this stuff, but no, it will be a missing guy and his dog, Chris Palmer, and yeah. his dog, which thoughts and prayers to his family, because, you know, they have released statements and all of that, and whatever happened, and they're at peace with that. So yeah, like, there is just,
there's just some things like we can't predict.
Yeah.
That whatever.
Literally, we cannot predict.
We can't.
Anything that happens to us.
No.
Because it's been a ride. 100 episodes.
It really
it's been
has.
What trends in true crime do you like or dislike? I know that we have two different.
We definitely have different ideas on stuff. Yeah. We definitely have different opinions on stuff. I think a lot of times people think that they're helping. I don't see it that way. I see it as they're exploiting and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And I hate that more than anything, when somebody exploits somebody. And it's in ways that you honestly, you don't probably never in a million years things that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I will say a majority of folks honestly truly believe that, that they think that they're doing good. Mm-hmm. But then there are those who deliberately know they are exploiting a family. They are exploiting the victim. And that is the grossest thing to me on the face of the planet, because mm-hmm. I know our passion is we want the victim's name, we want their story, and we want their legacy to continue on. Mm-hmm. It's not out there to make money off of it. It's not out there to get views off of it. No. It is legitimately, honestly, to get the victim's name, get their story out there, and be able to tell folks about that person.
Yeah.
And I think that's a beautiful thing that we're able to do. I think that's honestly, that's one of the best trends that you can do, is going out there mm-hmm. and doing it. But I think, of course, there's some of them you can't be in contact with. Mm-hmm. Because of how early on the cases were.
Yeah, and some, like, they're thankful we reached out to them, but they don't want to
talk about it and yeah. stuff. And a lot of times, they can't mm-hmm. talk about it. Like, to revert back to Alex, there was so much stuff he can tell you right now. I had to say, we have to be so cautious, mm-hmm. so cautious, because we can't jeopardize anything of that nature. And I think that's a lot of things too. And I think a lot of these families have been exploited to the point to where they don't trust. Mm-hmm. They don't trust nobody to get the story out there or yeah. anything of that nature, because we can take Jalea Davis.
The 100%. Best
example of it. Girl was out there. It was called Mile Marker 181.
Yeah.
She was telling Jalea's story 100%. She was murdered, all this stuff. Something happens. Next thing we know, she's siding with the police on everything, that it was a horrible accident. There's no way in the world that was an accident.
She had a full docuseries on herself, which everything has been pulled off of the face of the internet, the face of the earth, really, because I have tried to find that podcast.
You can't find it.
You cannot find it anywhere. You cannot find this documentary anywhere. You can find the trailer of the documentary places, but you cannot find the documentary. And I'm like, I want to watch this, because she's going to like Crime Con conventions. You hear that she is like screaming at Jalea's mother, like all of this stuff. And I'm like, who in their right mind?
And that literally wrecked a victim's family mm-hmm. from ever coming forward.
Yeah. And I will say, if you try to get the FOIA request on her case, Alex is a good example for this. She has told us that she got the FOIA request and she was followed out of the police department. They circled her vehicle, took a picture of her license plate, and then followed her out of the police department. So, like, yeah. But for me, I think there is an ethical way to do true crime, and I think there is a non-ethical way. So, like you said, exploiting cases, not ethical, but doing your research. And the Sauter case is a good example. We put out, which in all honesty, I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, I think there are more versions of the Sauter case than I think there are of the Bible.
There's so many different things with that.
Because there's conspiracies. People have different views of it. We've heard from two members of the family. They have totally different opposite things. So we released the episode, and then years later, Miranda Weeks messages us, calls me, emails me, I forget what, and set up a little Zoom call with her. And then 4 hours later, I'm learning there's all this new stuff and all of that. And then I don't know what to believe. That is one of those cases that I literally change my mind on any time I talk about it.
I always stick with my theory. Mm-hmm. I will always stick with that theory.
Mm-hmm. But.
But I will say this much. There are people who know exactly.
Oh my God. Have I told you what I found out? About Jane Kerr?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is, I definitely think the Genudolo family may have something involved with it, you know. I'm not saying yes or no on that, but, you know, I do think it's very odd circumstances that happened around the time happened, and then bing, bang, boom, house fire, kids are either dead or missing.
We've discussed this so many times. Like, we have. Like, y'all just don't understand. Like, we literally driving to Washington, D.C., we are, like, almost in a heated debate over the Sodders. And I stick by my theory. I will 1,000% stick by my theory on that. They couldn't have got burned up in that house fire.
Yeah.
They couldn't have. Because bones don't burn.
Yeah. See, I'm now on the part where I do not think they were in the fire. I do think they were outside at the time because her mom wanted them to do their chores before they went to bed. And I do think that there were people outside waiting. I think the fire was set intentionally, no matter what it was going to be set. Do I think the kids were kidnapped and taken somewhere else? No. I think they could have been taken somewhere else, but not to, like, a different state.
Oh, my God. You know the hotel that they were allegedly seen in? Mm-hmm. Do you know that's right down below my office?
Yeah, and it was a... We covered a case not too long ago. It was like right across from, it was what, Spanky's Bar, something mm-hmm. like that. I personally do not think they left the state of West Virginia, but I do not think they lived too long after the fire. That's my new theory that, you know, I kind of was thinking on.
I don't know. It's just, it's one of those things. I guess it's also my other thing that I would probably travel back in time for.
Oh my God. How many cases would we travel back in time for?
I know three right offhand. Three.
I know four.
My three, Nellie and Ray, mm-hmm. Sodders, mm-hmm. JonBenet.
See, mine are all local. Nellie and Ray, of course, James Lee Haynes. Of course, Charisse, and then Brenda Lambert. Because.
Those are my three.
Yeah. Those are my four. Which I guess I'm going to say five because I do want to know what happened to JonBenet. I'm in the Fleet White camp. I do think he had something to do with it. That's all I'm going to say about that because.
This is another case that we disagree very strongly about. Yeah. We disagree 1,000% on this.
Yeah. I think if the family had anything to do with it, there would have been a screw up by now, but.
Absolutely not.
I don't know.
I don't know either, but then after that, the Epstein files, so I don't know. Tell us what y'all's opinions are about JonBenet. Tell us your opinions about what do you think?
That would be a good Facebook poll. We might be doing that tomorrow.
Tell us what your opinions are about the Sodders, things of that nature, you guys.
Oh, you know, this kind of like goes into what we were just talking about. If you could reopen one cold case with unlimited resources, which case would it be?
It's going to be Charisse's.
Yeah.
It will. It's going to be Charisse's. Before she was ever found in things, I would always say Alex's mm-hmm. case.
Yeah.
Charisse's another one that's, I don't know, I just feel a deep connection with.
Yeah.
With that one.
God, mine's a toss up. I don't know.
I'd be tearing Jack up. to find Charisse.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I would be on everything that said no trespassing. I'd be trespassing. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say this just because of the family and like how the case has been with me my entire life, James Lee Haynes. Because I've seen the fault. We've seen the binder. Well, I've seen the binder. You haven't. The binder was in the car when we did the thing. Thing is thick. It's thick with three C's. Like, it is thick. And I've seen the... We've seen what police reports we have. And... Yeah. That case failed tremendously.
They were failed.
Yeah.
They were 1,000% failed.
Yeah. And... It kills me for the simple fact that people were arrested in it. Kind of like Charisse, you know who did it.
Mm-hmm.
But they wouldn't arrest them. And I don't care who hears this. I do not care if his family hears it. Lundy Trump was a crazy son of a bitch. And solved or unsolved cases, which one is your favorite to cover?
I was going to say an unsolved.
Same.
Because
I love a solved one, but an unsolved one,
there's so much mystery around, mm-hmm. and you see, literally get to see how that case got screwed up.
Yeah.
And it's honestly, a lot of it is intentional, but other times it's unintentional.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the unsolved cases we have covered could 1,000% been solved.
Yeah, one that comes to my mind is Roberta Elam. Like, her case could be solved today.
There's so many cases that could be solved. Fun little fact about that right there. I was talking to a member today, and he said, that's my favorite case that y'all covered.
I mean, her case, it's one of those that I took my time on because... We watched a TV show on it. We've mm-hmm. done our research. And yeah, I'm like,
But when I think so much about it, it just burns me up to no end, knowing that a lot of these cases could have been solved.
Mm-hmm.
Families could be at rest. Bodies could be located. Yeah. And that's all I'm going to say on that. I got to be a good girl. I don't have bail money right now.
What's one case everyone should know about?
I won't say names. But every case that does not get national, state, local attention
mm-hmm.
are the cases that you need to look at.
Yeah.
Because there are reasons why those cases are not out there.
Mm-hmm.
There are absolute reasons why they're not out there. And it really upsets me that the fact that a lot of these victims, their stories can't be told
mm-hmm.
because there's, again, it boils down to that whole stigma when it boils down to your economic status of whether or not you're going to get coverage or not.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hear of a case that is not making, like I said, your national news, your state news, your local news, things of that nature, there's a reason why those cases are not being covered.
Yeah, and I mean,
and a lot of them have corruption in it.
Yeah, and like we've covered three cases here recently that we did not know
about.
There
was not that much media coverage.
There was not that much coverage on it.
No.
What's been the most shocking case we've researched? I know I've made a string board for a case. It was the case of Roberta Elam. Made a string board, never released it, but yeah. I have all of the stuff still.
Honestly, I'm going to say it was the three cases. yeah. that we just covered, and we cannot wait for y'all to be able to see what we're doing. And I know it's so horrible, but this is like one of the best teases of all time.
I feel like this is just foreplay with nothing that's going to happen for God knows how long.
But you never know, though.
Yeah.
I think those cases were very shocking.
Oh, wait till you hear about the other one I had to cover.
Oh, I've read about that one.
Oh.
Double.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Danny Casolaro was
he is, a crazy is always one. A shocking one. Is it bad that I have a hard time remembering a majority of our cases?
Ooh, a shocking one. Crumb, the policeman from Mingo County who was shot point blank.
Yes.
Broad daylight, eating a sandwich or something. And
y'all don't know how much he hated me for that case.
Oh my.
Yeah. Y'all don't even know.
There was like so much into that case. I'm like, and it was in the early days of Mountain State Mysteries. And I'm like, we're just doing big case after big case. And I'm like, okay, let's do this. And it's like, oh my God, there was so much in that case.
That one was a shocking one. Harry Powers, mm-hmm. like we said earlier, that one is always a shocking one. Mm-hmm.
The Greenbrier Ghost, in a way, is a shocking one because.
Yeah. Oh, God, I hate to do this, but where we have done so many cases, I have a hard time remembering them.
100. The reason the Greenbrier Ghost case was shocking is there was stuff that we did not know about her case that we released. And we were lucky to go with our friend Stephanie to visit her grave.
Yes. Shout out, Steph.
One day we are going to do something on her couch. Because if y'all don't know, if you guys are new, my mama randomly bought a couch. And the woman was like, this is from Zona's house. It's been passed down through my family. And we're like, who the hell is Zona? And she went, the Greenbrier Ghost. And we're like, So yeah, my cousin has that couch now in Chicago. And
okay. One that we have not brought up. The Beckley John Doe.
Oh my God, the Beckley John Doe.
We literally just talked about this.
We literally just drove by.
Yeah, we just drove by there.
Yeah, I was like, was that me and you? But yeah, no, it was us because we went to go visit a gravesite.
That right there is crazy and shocking because how can you be in a car with somebody for over 2 hours and not know their name?
About them. Because like the woman who picked James Lee Haynes up, they talked almost the entire way. She knew everything about James.
This person knew absolutely nothing about the John Doe.
Yeah.
Also, too, Aaliyah Lunsford.
Oh, Aaliyah Lunsford. That case makes me sad. And I randomly, like, we recorded the episode. You can tell that the intro is totally different from what it should be because we recorded that. I got access to the police call of her mom. So that was kind of like thrown in after. I guess we could have redone like the intro, but well, it's not the intro. It's actually the beginning of the case.
It's honestly like that one right there was just so shocking. Case,
yeah.
And it's for the fact that her body has never been recovered.
Yeah.
I mean, there's that one.
And that her young sisters, I mean, they were older than her, tried to take care of her.
That and that they testified on her behalf.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I can tell you a shocking case that we have, like, dabbled in research, but we haven't covered yet, is Natalie Cochran, Michael Cochran.
Yes.
Because that reminds me of Michelle Michaels. And that one was a crazy one to cover.
Oh my gosh, that one was so crazy. Um, Let's see here. What else? Another crazy one. Teresa Ann Woods.
Yes. Luckily, we got in contact with her family. Somehow we have been by the convalescent building so many times because it is across from the Wendy's in Oak Hill, which is seconds away from the 4-minute lunch, apparently in the case of the Mad Butcher, which the Wendy's is in, is where the hotel was in the Mad Butcher, which I'm just going to say that one was a crazy one to cover because we didn't want to cover it, but everyone asked us to cover it.
Jalea. Top. Top.
What? Did that take me like a month to put together?
So let me tell y'all how this one came about. With my job, I travel over the entire state of West Virginia. I also travel in parts of Ohio and Kentucky. I am in Ohio. I'm going around talking to folks, telling them about the podcast a little bit as we're talking. One of the associates look at me and says, "Have you ever heard about Jalea Davis?" And I said, "Excuse me?" They start telling me this story. I cannot get out to my car quick enough to send him a message.
I forget if it was a text or a voice message, but I know
it was one of the two.
I know my reply was, "I'm already listening to a podcast on it, and I was at work."
Single-handedly, there is nothing about that case that makes any type of sense whatsoever.
We have not crime scene pictures, but we have aftermath pictures. We have reports. I'm sure we could get more from Alex because she has the entire case file.
I think one of the most disturbing things about Jalea's case
is how everyone lawyered up really quick, or the fact that she flew out of the passenger side window.
And the driver's side.
Yeah, she was driving, flew out the passenger side, flipped over her car.
Hit her head on the back of the trunk and flew over into the traffic.
Yeah, and her clothes were folded up neatly. Like, we could totally go into another episode on this case.
And do you know somebody had the nerve to put up and they were like, "Oh, they were only photo because of the aftermath." That was afterwards. No.
You have people like seeing someone in the area of the time because they thought her body was a deer. Sadly, she was run over a lot. We did get access to the police report that had the 911 calls in it. If you listen to it, we play little voice actors.
Also, too, another thing about that right there, her sister was one of the very first people up on the crime scene. And, like, all these people that she was with just immediately lawyered up.
Yeah.
What are we going to do? We're going to lawyer up everybody.
Literally.
We're not going to get caught. We're going to have lawyers, and they're going to think and move that stuff around to where we're going to be innocent.
Yeah.
And can we just talk about this part? The police reports weren't even done correctly.
Oh, yeah. No, there was, I don't even remember what all was wrong, but there was stuff that was wrong in it, and we were like,
they had her birthday listed as the day of her death.
Yeah.
Same year, everything.
Yeah, that was crazy. Like, her case is crazy.
Her case will always. And I'm going to tell you what one of my favorite parts is. Is I'll go, and when I'm talking to people, I'm like, especially if they're college kids. I love y'all. There'll be in criminal justice.
Yeah.
I will say, "Hey, can I ask your opinion about this?" I will describe to them all about Jalea's accident. Well, hold on a minute.
Quote, unquote.
Accident.
Yeah, air quotes.
But I'm like, her murder. And I tell them, and they said there's no way physically that can be done.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of criminal cases, was it West Virginia Wesleyan?
Yes.
Yeah, Courtney was somewhere and she sends me a text. "Oh, we've been talked about in the criminal justice classes at West Virginia Wesleyan. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like, invite us down. Like, we would love to talk. Like,
one of my favorite things one day was I was doing a new hire orientation, and I was just joking around with the person, and I was like, oh, they can't eat you or kill you, but if they do, you'll end up on my podcast. And just completely joking around and everything. And they go, you do a podcast? And I said, yeah. And they were like, what is it? And I was like, oh, Mount State Mysteries. And the guy goes, you're that Courtney? He was like, my son listens to y'all all the time. I can't wait till I get to tell him I met you today.
Yeah. I love that.
Oh my God.
I've been recognized in Dollar Store before. And ironically, it wasn't with you. I was with Alex, and she was like our biggest hype girl. So shout out to you, Alex. You will forever be our ride or die hype girl. Yeah.
Gretchen Fleming.
Oh my God. I don't even think you've been a part of a Gretchen Fleming episode. I think there has been.
I'm always either out of town or I'm sick.
No. I remember Gretchen Fleming.
I was out of town first time.
No, I don't even think you were out of town.
Yeah, I was.
I think it was one of these things that it was, I wanted to get it out really quick because I'm like, this is so weird.
I was working.
Yeah, and I literally just got home, typed something up in what, 15, 20 minutes, released it. Then I think on the update episode, you were out of town working. And, like, it's so sad because her grandmother has passed away. Her dad has passed away.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And, like, unfortunately, that piece of trash is still out there walking the streets.
Yeah.
And I love it, too, that any town he goes into,
people blast his ass on Facebook.
Not only that, but they get him thrown out of town.
But, yeah, I can say with Gretchen's case, happy that people do boot him out of town and all of that good stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that was the final question that I had because, I mean, 100 episodes, it's been crazy. And what has happened to us has been crazy.
Yes.
Like, we would not be here if it wasn't for you guys listening each and every single Monday. So, thank you. It means literally the world to us because we never thought we would be here.
No.
So, with that being said, we will be here for another 100 episodes and beyond. And we will be back next week with a brand new case and hopefully a new Mystery Club exclusive episode, which is a case that we've talked about before. Because who doesn't love a good celebrity murder? And then, you know, don't forget to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook.
All at Mount State Mysteries.
And, you know,
Apple, Spotify, anywhere you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube.
Yeah.
So,
all at Mount State Mysteries.
Yeah.
So, we will see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.